Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking basketball today. I may sound a little bit strange since I am not a sports person, but we have a dynamic lady who has written an absolutely fabulous book about the world of women's basketball. It's titled Why She Plays. Christine Baker is my guest, and Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Well, I have rarely come across someone, especially a woman, that has had such a passion for a game, the game of basketball. And you are a writer for Full Court Press. You are also an assistant varsity coach, a copywriter, you're a graphic designer. And Becky Hammond, who has also contributed to your book, is one of the most recognized players in the WNBA and is a WNBA All-Star and player with the San Antonio Silver Stars. Christine, there are so many young women today, and I've had the privilege of knowing a few, that because of being good in sports, have had the opportunity not only to enjoy whatever game they're in, whether it's basketball, baseball, swimming, volleyball, it has really been such a benefit to them. Tell us about you and how you found your passion. It seems like you were born to hold a ball in your hand and to play the game.
I think I might have been born to play basketball, absolutely. I think for me, basketball, I was always a really active kid, and basketball to me was an outlet. When I was very young, I was really shy. And when I played basketball, I wasn't shy. I could be aggressive. I could think differently than when I was off the court. And it made sense to me in a lot of ways. As I grew up and excelled in the sport, opportunities presented themselves to me to play at a good high school program, to play college basketball. And it became ingrained in me. It became a part of who I was. And if you talk to, and I've talked to many other female athletes and friends over the years, male or female, and when you play a sport during your formative years, I think it teaches you so many life lessons. It teaches you discipline and teamwork and all of the things that you'll need in business or in life when you grow up. And for those of us who played sports, especially young women, I think it gives you a kind of self-confidence to try different things, to, to think outside of the box and to take on different challenges in your life as they may come across. For me, basketball was very much a vehicle for that. When I started writing the book and started talking to coaches and players at all levels of the sport and even researchers, what I found was really interesting that, you know, there are statistics that the Women's Sports Foundation puts out where they talk about young women, and when they play sports, they're less likely to become pregnant as teenagers. They're less likely to smoke or to drink or to get involved in negative aspects of life. And female athletes tend to be more physically fit. They tend to take on physical fitness far beyond their collegiate years, which is so important. So I think it teaches a lot of life lessons for me, and this book was very much a journey for me because I had started a career away from the sport. I missed it terribly, and for me, this book was about coming back to the place that I loved best, which is really a basketball court.
That is something. You've expressed so much very good information within a very short context of time. It has been my observation, very similar patterning. When young people are actively involved in sports, they usually are so busy. And in today's world, there's really an emphasis on stay well, take care of yourself. We want your muscles to work. When you think of the young people training for the Olympics, yes, we hear about a few that get involved with the drugs, But typically, dependent on their coach, dependent on who their example is, they won't. They're out
right.
there because they're competing with themselves. They really, it's like Michael Phelps. He was always competing with himself. It was
mm-hmm.
out there just, he absolutely loved the game of swimming. I say game of swimming, but it really is a game. And that's
yep.
something you bring up is that sports are entertainment. The business of sports is entertainment. And I thought that was a very powerful statement.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think one of the pitfalls that, you know, we're seeing more and more frequently, quite honestly, because a college education is extraordinarily expensive, as you know. And for many parents, when a child has an interest in athletics, they push that interest because it could pay off when the child is 18 years old as a scholarship.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What a lot of researchers are saying and what we're finding now more and more on the women's game, not just basketball, but women's sports in general, because there is so much parity now since Title IX, that children are specializing in sports earlier and earlier. And that sometimes has a negative effect, particularly if the parents are pushing too hard for their child to be the best at everything.
Mm-hmm.
We're finding that children are actually burning out at a faster rate, and they may burn out from basketball in middle school and never touch a ball again. Whereas if you let the child have fun and enjoy the sport, then they're more likely to become lifelong players or supporters of the sport. So I think it's a really fine line. On one hand, you know, you want children to excel and be the best that they can be. And certainly Michael Phelps has a competitive edge that not many other human beings on the planet have. But there's a really fine line, I think, for a parent to understand that, yeah, I want my kid to be great, but I also want them to have fun doing it.
I think that is so important. And one of the factors that I have become aware of and having conversations with some young people that are really involved in sports and have gotten scholarships to college because of it, is that it's a great stress reliever.
Mm-hmm.
When they're going through all kinds of things, peer pressure, they've got a lot of classes, because school is full-time for them if they're very fortunate, if they don't have to work. If they have to work, that's something else. But when they get into their sports, when they get out there involved, it's just like they turn the rest of the world off, because the sports activity requires a level of concentration that allows them physically to just release a lot of tension. I mean, look at what we're told as adults to be able to work with stress. Go out and exercise. Do something. Well, it's not any different with a young person. They've got, you know, more hormones working for them. It's true. But the truth is that's what they need also.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, I joke around, you know, with my friends all the time that if I'm having a really bad day or a really hectic day or very stressful, the one place, some people want to go to a bar, some people want to go to, to a friend's house, some people want to go to a massage. I want to get on a basketball court, because for me, always, you know, through my formative years on up, like 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock at night was my time to shut out the world. And you talk to any athlete who plays high school sports, and that's usually the practice time. It's just around the same time. And that gets ingrained in you that this is my time to shut out the world and just play a game. Because it is a game, whether you play baseball or volleyball or basketball, and whether you play it at the Olympic level or the club level, it's a game, ultimately.
You have some athletes that you mention in the book. One of them is Miss L. Bacher. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And then also Stephanie Viano. Now,
mm-hmm.
Stephanie, you describe her as a 5'7" guard from Queens County, New York. She played basketball at Archbishop Molloy High School in Briarwood, New York. And it was a very competitive school, but she said every time she stepped on the court, every second, every minute, every hour, every day of practice, she felt she had to prove herself to her teammates, to her coaches, to herself. And she
mm-hmm.
loved the feeling she was getting when she was driving herself so hard to make the basket.
Mm-hmm.
She was doing all kinds of moves, and she said she had to do a lot of sacrifices, but it was worth it to her. What mm-hmm. a mindset.
Absolutely. And, you know, someone like Stephanie, and I've had the pleasure of talking to Stephanie many times, someone like Stephanie, regardless of whether she plays basketball another day in her life, will be an immensely successful human being at life because she gets it. You know, she gets it. It's about working hard and making sacrifices and, you know, working with a team and bettering yourself as an individual. And that when you do excel, that feeling of success that you have, whether or not anyone notices, but that innate feeling of success that you have within yourself that I gave my best at something, that's something she'll take with her for the rest of her life. And sports teaches that.
There was another young lady, Nicole Bucetti. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that that's the correct pronunciation. Correct me if I'm wrong. But Nicole said the basketball taught her to never let the people who want her to fail bring her down. And I thought, what an outstanding statement. To never allow people who wanted her to fail to bring her down. You know, we're not given that kind of a mindset. But by golly, she came with it. And then also another one of her teammates, Janita Sessions, she said, I play because it gives me something to look forward to every day, and you've got to be able to communicate in a positive way with people. Now, that's something about sports that we don't often think of, is that if it's a good team, you have to know how to read each other. You have to know how to communicate. You have to be able to respect weaknesses as well as strengths and make them work for you. And communication is so important to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, and part of what you're talking about really is nonverbal communication. It's the kind of communication that you read on people without them saying a word. And I think it's so, you know, look, what I love about this book really is that it gets at real reasons why young women and, you know, adults are playing the game of basketball. Karen Albacker, who you mentioned, Nicole, who you mentioned, these young ladies, they have an understanding of life that was taught to them through sport that, you know, those of us who play sports, it's like, yeah, we get that. That's second nature to us. But those people who don't play sports, I think sometimes hear some of these lessons that we're talking about and say, wow, you know, that's pretty powerful stuff. For someone to say that, you know, I don't want people who want me to fail to bring me down. And this is, we're talking about, you know, a young woman, a high school student, it's pretty amazing stuff. And what I find so intriguing about that is that, you know, look, as we get older, we know that there are people that we come across in our day-to-day existence who may not be positive sources for us, who may want us to fail for different selfish reasons. And a lot of us fall into the trap of thinking, well, if they think I'm not good enough, then I'm not good enough. But I think what sport helps teach, particularly young women, is that it doesn't matter what you think about me, it's what I think about myself. And if I give my best every day at something, that good things will come from it.
I agree. And these are lessons through the game and having a good coach that's just absolutely marvelous. Now, I want to give some statistics. You said, according to a 2004 to 2005 high school athletics participation survey, conducted by the National Federation of State High School Associations, and it was based on competition at the high school level in the 2004-05 school year. Basketball was the most popular girls' program with 456,543 participants. Now, back in 71 and 72, only 294,015 girls participated in sports, period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Period. And then the following year, it jumped up to 8,017.73. However, 20 years later, the number of girls that participated in sports competitively ballooned to 2,130,315.
Yeah, it's a big number.
Wow, what a jump.
It's a big, big number, and what it shows is, and look, there are a lot of scholars out there who only study Title IX, and for those who don't know Title IX, it basically was a law, it was legislation that forced colleges and high schools to be equal in their treatment and their funding of sports for men's programs and women's programs or girls' programs and boys' programs so that there was parity and there were opportunities for girls to play sports. And Donna Lopiano, the former executive director of the Women's Sports Foundation, I think one of the things that she said to me was that we're not yet at critical mass. We're not yet seeing, she expects the numbers to go higher.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't disagree with her. I think, especially for team sports for young women, because there's such a social component to it that is of interest to young girls. And also, now that we're in 2008 and almost 2009, there's no longer a stigma attached to a girl playing sports the way there was when, say, I was growing up.
Right.
I grew up playing basketball on an all-boys league because there just physically there were no girls' leagues to play in. Now I think girls have their own leagues. They can see professional athletes. They can see the Olympic team winning gold medal after gold medal. They have female role models within sports that they didn't before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's only going to make more girls want to play, which is a great thing.
I think it is absolutely wonderful, and one of the myths that is going into the toilet, which I really think is good, and it upsets me whenever I hear anybody saying dumb jocks. There,
mm-hmm.
And this is for the guys as well as the gals.
Mm-hmm.
For years, any male, long before the women started really getting into it, any male that was involved in sports, they just figured they didn't have brains. They'd have all of these slurs that they would
mm-hmm.
throw out. And
mm-hmm.
fortunately, that has changed because in the area of sports, there has been. I'm not saying there haven't been those that have been unable to read, but I'm just saying in general, the expectation on this and the standards regarding those that are involved in sports is that scholastically, they have to have at least a C average, if not better. And so
mm-hmm.
there is that expectation if they have a good coach. And I know there's rotten apples in every industry. But
mm-hmm.
I want to talk about coaching for a minute because you mention a coach, Bob Mackey.
Mm-hmm.
And you have such a regard for this man. And he doesn't give any quarter to anybody that comes in to play on his team, does he?
No, not at all. Bob Mackey is the coach at Christ the King High School in New York, which is arguably one of the strongest girls' high school programs in the country. He runs Division I college practices, essentially, for his kids. He's a tough coach. He is hard on his kids to excel in the classroom. He is hard on his kids to excel on the court. And those girls who play for Christ the King, and there is a long line of girls who want to play for Bob Mackey at Christ the King because of where it might lead. He works them very hard. He has high expectations, but they all respect him. And I think at the end of the day, when you talk about coaching, you know, as you said, there are some bad apples in the bunch. A good coach isn't easy, but a good coach is fair.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Mackey is extremely fair, extremely successful. So he has a formula that works very well. He has a coaching staff that does exactly what he asks of them. But he's got kids who come to play, and he doesn't sugarcoat anything. If you can't perform, you don't play on the floor, and that's the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I was really interested in Bob was when I asked him what his biggest success was. Now, this guy's won national championships and done all sorts of things. And he said his greatest success is when one of his student athletes signs a scholarship letter, and he knows that those parents can now relax because, you know, they couldn't afford college otherwise. And by playing sports and by pushing his student athletes in the classroom and on the court, he's able to open up doors of opportunity for them to get a college education, which I think is super important stuff. And the one other point that I'd like to make, getting back to your previous statement, is that, you know, when girls go to college and they play sports, and there are statistics to show this, and I don't know them off the top of my head, but their graduation rates are much higher. Their cumulative GPAs are much higher than their male counterparts. One of the reasons that we think that happens is because girls know that when they play sports in college, they may not get to continue to play post-college and that they need to have a career.
Mm-hmm.
For some young men, especially at the Division I level, they're brought up thinking that they're going to play professional basketball and make a gazillion dollars and not have to work a day in their lives. But for many women, and if you look at the NCAA website, you know, a lot of these Division I athletes who are, it's essentially a full-time job to play basketball at that
mm-hmm.
level.
That's
they're
right.
double majors in chemistry and biology and molecular biology and astrophysics. And, you know, they're doing amazing things in the classroom because they know that when this time ends, they've got to go on and they've got to earn money and have a career and have a life outside of the sport, which is a little bit different sometimes for the men.
Let's talk about scholarships for a moment. The Amateur Athletic Union, the AAU, you say is the largest nonprofit multi-sport volunteer service organization in the United States. You were not impressed with it. You didn't have a good relationship with it. However, mm-hmm. it has been very important in the lives of a number of young women. Give us a quick rundown on that.
Sure. The AAU, anyone who plays basketball, basically, at some level, when they're good enough, is asked to become involved in AAU. AAU is seen as sort of a feeder program for bigger college programs. And if you're a good high school athlete, you need almost to play in AAU to be taken seriously as an athlete. What I found very disconcerting about AAU, and I have talked to a lot of coaches who feel the same way, is that it is a very political system. In some counties and some states, it's not run very well. So the coaches who are running the programs are in it sort of for the money and not for the betterment of the student athlete. And are sort of counteracting the coaching that a student athlete may be receiving at the high school level, which is really should be their primary source of coaching, not at an AAU level. AAU is typically played off season from a high school season. So it'll be played during the summer. And what I found concerning, and this came to me from many coaches, is that, and Jody Conrad said this to me, and Jody is one of the forerunners in women's basketball. She was the head coach at the University of Texas for 28 seasons. Jody said something really interesting to me about AAU. She said, AAU, when you play in an AAU program, you sometimes play 7 or 8 games on a Saturday. One
oh
right after
goodness.
The other. Yeah, you'll just keep playing game after game after game for with your team for a whole day. And she said, you know, what is that teaching our kids about winning and losing? Because when you're a really, really strong athlete and a strong competitor, you take losses very seriously. And in some cases, you know, you have to think about that loss and process it. In an AAU system, you don't have time because you're playing another game in 10 minutes. So you don't process a win or a loss. You just kind of take it as, we lost, or, we won. And there's an indifference to it that actually dilutes the competitive spirit. So I have never been, you know, 100% pleased with the AAU system. I think it was started for the right reasons, but I think it's turned into something a little different that maybe was not intended. I think the folks at high levels of AAU are trying to counteract that. And they're trying to do the right thing. You know, I don't want to put out the impression that the AAU is not trying to do the right thing. I think as an organization, they want to be involved in the sport for the betterment of the sport. But I just think it's gotten out of control a little bit.
Teach Up to Natero is a woman that has played for the Sacramento Monarchs, and she also became a part of Old Dominion University's team. And she has been a 4-time WNBA All-Star and is a member of the Portuguese national team. She represented her own country when she was 14 years old, and while she was at Old Dominion, she was a Naismith Trophy finalist and winner of the Wade Trophy in 1998. She set an NCAA Final Four record with 8 steals in the 1997 championship game lost to Tennessee. This woman said that all of her experiences, just a few that I've mentioned there, enabled her to be a part of the WNBA. Is this something that's going to be expanding more for women in the future? Do you see this as something that's going to be growing into a dimension that would make an opportunity for women to play professional basketball afterwards like the guys do?
Well, I think the WNBA has proven to be a successful business venture. And the WNBA is funded in part by the NBA, which is helpful because, you know, there are a number of teams who aren't selling the right number of tickets, and the NBA is assisting to make sure that those programs take off. I think what has changed drastically, and I can't stress this enough, over the last 5 or 6 years, the WNBA has become much more competitive. The number of women who are coming out of the NCAA Division I programs are better athletes. They're faster. They're stronger. And it is much more competitive than it's ever been before. Where there's a bit of a disconnect, quite frankly, is that because the NBA is sort of assisting the WNBA, they're also holding them down. Because there are only so many people who are going to watch basketball. And quite honestly, the NBA doesn't want a women's game to be going on the same time as a men's game because they want people watching the men's game.
Mm-hmm.
So the women play during the summer. The women play a very shortened schedule. They only play about 35 or 40 games. It's only during the summer months. It's not the optimal time for people to be watching or going to arenas to watch games live. People are taking vacations. They're not inside watching TV. So there's a lot of downsides as to when they play. Now, that all, and to some people, it's like, well, who cares? Well, it affects their salaries, because if we look at an NBA player and we look at a WNBA player, an NBA player is getting a boatload of money.
Mm-hmm.
Even a non-starter is getting a significant contract at the NBA level, where a WNBA player, a superstar at that level, is getting paid roughly $90,000 or $95,000 for their work. If more people watched the games and if more people went to the games, then those salaries would increase because that's where that money comes from. I do think in Tisha's case, and Tisha's a really good example, an international player who came to Old Dominion and had a wonderful career there, highly successful. She has been in the league since its inception, and she continues to play and she continues to contribute. She has made a very good salary with the WNBA, but where she makes her money and where all of the other WNBA players make their money is actually in the off season playing in other countries, because in other countries they pay them far better.
Fascinating. But for those that love the game, that can physically work with it, make it happen, it can be very good. You've got so much wonderful information about the game in here, Christine. There is more than just that, though. It's more than just about basketball. It's about the sense of pride in sports, the value of sports, the energy and the enthusiasm that goes along with it, wisdom for parents, understanding of what to expect out of a coach. I mean, you've got so much good information here that for me, when I was reading it, and I'm not a real into the sports type of a person, I absolutely loved it. And I think if there's anyone that knows of a young woman that is getting ready to go to college or is really interested in sports, this is a must give as a gift. The holidays are coming up. If you know of anyone that has a passion, loves to play sports, why she plays is absolutely outstanding. This is about the world of basketball. Christine Baker is my guest. Christine, quickly, do you have a website people can go to?
I do. It's www.whysheplays.com.
Whysheplays.com. Christine, I congratulate you on doing such an outstanding job with conveying such excellent information about a sport that I think for a young woman, a young man, is absolutely outstanding, but also, more than anything else, your passion for this sport, which makes the book just come alive.
Well, thank you so much, Donna. I appreciate being with you tonight. And, you know, this book was always about my love of the game. The game of basketball has given me so much, and in a small way, this book was my trying to give back to the game. So thank you for taking an interest to it, and I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Donna Sebo here. Her website for Christine Baker's Why She Plays is the same title as the book, whysheplays.com. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. More good things to share with you when we come back.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. If you want to give me a call, we've just opened up the telephone line, so you can do that. Hey, here are the telephone numbers you can call in to. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Also, we have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, just remember that when you call in to me, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, just let me tell you what I perceive. I'm an information resource, and so when I finish, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you desire. This is an opportunity for me to share with you those skills that I've worked with for so many years. And yes, I do work as a counselor, and I do readings privately, but this is something that when I'm on the air, it gives you an opportunity to see. There's no games, there's no gimmicks. This is a discipline that I've worked with for a number of years. So, again, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, or 530-876-3222. Yesterday, before we got busy with phone calls, I had started to talk to you about TCM. Now, this is an abbreviation for traditional Chinese medicine, and this involves a number of different therapies, and to me, it is absolutely marvelous that in our part of the world, we have finally, after many, many, many years of battling over this, been able to integrate alternative therapies in with the traditional Western medicine. And more scientific research is proving that this has a value. There are still some down in the mouthers that say, oh, this isn't valid. The truth is there are so many different ways to work with people because we're all uniquely different in our body chemistry, in the way that we feel, our emotional makeup. There's such a complexity with a human being. And when you can use different modalities, some work very well, others won't. And they have found in research how traditional Chinese medicine, which is abbreviated as TCM, has been able to help a lot of patients. Now, what kind of alternative therapies are included in this kind of a label? Well, it's herbal medicine, acupuncture, acupressure, cupping, breathing, meditation exercises. Here in the Pacific Northwest, and this goes back, oh my goodness, about 6 years, there was a center that was opened up that I had the privilege of going through for breast cancer, and it obviously for women, and I was astonished at the planning that had gone into this, because when you walked into this center, one, the colors that they had within the reception area alone, which was a nice spacious reception area, they were warm, they were vibrant colors that immediately relaxed you, and there was beauty everywhere that you looked. They had arranged it so that there were dressing rooms for the women that enabled them to have privacy. Towels were warmed for the women. If you've ever gone through exams and you sit there freezing, you know what it's like. Guys, you do too. But the gals especially, and there's this sense when you have been given a diagnosis of, let's say, breast cancer, that there's an invasion that you feel about yourself physiologically, and there is fear that sometimes will come in. Well, they did a marvelous job at this environment that I was visiting, and then, to my amazement, I was shown how women were treated when they went through this facility and how they were told they had options of the treatments they wanted to take. If someone did not want chemotherapy or radiation, then there were other things that could be worked with. They had brought in equipment that enabled the examination for a woman to be much gentler. They were introducing a different type of mammogram. And again, this is 6 years ago, and since then they have done all kinds of improvements because it's an ongoing job. But the biggest thing I saw was, number one, choice, and number two, education. They were willing to spend the time to educate women so that instead of being terrified and thinking that they had a death verdict when someone gave them the announcement, you may have breast cancer, or you do have breast cancer, they were willing to work with them. Now, that change in and of itself, to me, was astronomical, and it was the first center of its kind on the West Coast, and that is something we're seeing more and more. Why? Because we as consumers are beginning to demand this. We are educating ourselves, and I'm not saying we're doctors, but we're saying, why is it that if you're giving me a bunch of poison, that is supposed to assist me? So as we become more educated, and as we become aware that we have choice, and as we become advocates of wellness, all of these understandings about different modalities we can work with become very, very important. So what I wanted to do is just share, and I know so many of you are even much better read than I am, but I just thought I would share these few points with you because I think it's important. Now, herbal medicine, well, usually in Chinese medicine, you go through a very, very elaborate examination. I know I went through one many years ago. It was with an Asian doctor, and it was one of the most thorough exams I ever had had in my life. So herbal medicine targets what they consider a patient's disharmony, and it's intended to have a specific action or result. Now, they can be combined with particular adjustments for the individual, and that's very important. Western medicine hasn't done that. We're evolving into it, but that's something we haven't yet become comfortable with, but that is changing. Now, herbs can be used raw, dried, or boiled. They can be made into a powder. They can be put into capsules. They can sometimes be made into a tincture. So this is something that depends on the person, and the training for an Asian physician is quite extensive. I've known a number of people that have gone through it. It's taken them years to be able to qualify as a physician in certain modalities. Acupuncture, Well, we're dealing with meridians or channels of energy, the chi that flows through our body. And acupuncture is the practice of inserting fine needles into specific surface body points in order to unlock the chi. Digressing for just a moment away from Chinese, in South America, there were particular shamans that would read what they called the rivers of light, which is the chi. And whenever they were going to work with someone, if there was a block in that river of light, they knew that's where the problem was. And that's what they worked on, was how to unblock the river of light. So depending on what culture you're in, there may be a different way of communicating about someone, but they may have a lot more in common than you expect. Now, moxibustion is something I had not heard of. It uses the dried herb mugwort, which is crushed and formed into a stick or a cone and burned directly or indirectly on the skin. Now, I have never experienced this, but I have to tell you, a friend of mine who visited China was climbing one of these gigantic stairways that goes up. They have maybe 1,000 stairs in them. And Paul was in pretty good shape, but when he was climbing, he was just going into utter severe muscle spasms. He just could barely move. He was in excruciating pain. Well, at the time he was in China, and this, I believe, was in the 90s, he said that there were little buildings all the way up the stairwell, because this was not an uncommon occurrence. And he was told to step in because he couldn't move anymore. He was in such excruciating pain. So they put him into this little building, and he sat there, and a guy did exactly that. He took what looked like a cigarette and lit it and blew on it until it got nice and hot, and then put it on his leg, and he said it totally took away all of the pain. He said, I'm a Westerner. I'd never believe that something that looked like a hand-rolled cigarette would make a difference, but it did. And he didn't have any further problems with the muscles in his legs. Acupressure, is pressing and massaging areas of the body to stimulate the chi flow. Now, cupping is something that I heard about years ago. And a lot of people said, oh, it's just a bunch of nonsense. But it's been used for a long time. It's a technique where a burning stick or taper is held inside of a cup for a short time, then removed with a cup being placed immediately on a selected area. Now, the burning stick removes all the oxygen in the cup, and when the cup is placed on the skin, it creates a vacuum. And it is worked with, again, the meridians in the body, and it's similar to acupuncture and acupressure because of this, and again, is encouraged to enable the energy flow in the body to work. Chinese food therapy, they feel that there are certain foods for certain people, not unlike the Indian. Yes, there is all of this companion compatibility in different cultures again. Certain people do well with certain foods in the healing process. Different ages, all of this. This is another part of their understanding. General rules sometimes are just minimize spicy and greasy foods, sound familiar, and to cook foods lightly and serve warm, and to chew the food slowly. Now, Qigong. This is a marvelous technique, and I've had the good fortune of coming to know some people that are very skilled in this. It really makes a difference, and we in the West are becoming more and more familiar with it, and some of the masters of Qigong have come in to the United States training people because they say it's important that this knowledge be passed on. So it is wonderful, not only for exercise. There's Qigong you can do as a form of exercise to keep yourself healthy, but also learning how to use the energy of the body to heal other people. Tai Chi, wonderful. It promotes strength and flexibility and helps to maintain health. And Feng Shui, well, that is all about creating harmony in the environment. And these are wonderful things to know about. All of this is compatible. It is not the only thing to do, but when we can become more educated about this, and be in environments where we can meet with people who have the understanding of these different modalities and talk with them. It is amazing how it can be very complimentary. There is a story that, should I have the time, I'll share with you about a woman, her name was Jenny Rokemore, And she worked with Western as well as traditional Chinese medicine to get past some of the challenges that she was facing physically. Now, I know that we're going to break. Telephone lines are open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756 for Canadians, and also 530-876-3222. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, and 530-876-3222. A couple of things that I want to mention to you. Number one, I'm having the glyconutrient class. We're also going to be discussing this evening, and it's in my area in the Pacific Northwest, in the Tacoma, Washington area. If you would like to attend this evening, it's going to be at 7 o'clock. Give me a call at my office, which if you're in the Tacoma area, it would be 253-582-5604. If you're outside of the Tacoma, Washington area, you'd call 800-872-8852. I haven't been able to do a class like this for a long time, but what we will be talking about are glyconutrients, some of the latest research regarding nutrition and wellness, and preventative positionings, and also we're going to be talking about TTAP. Now, Teresa Tapp is an absolutely awesome gal. I have been using her exercise regimen, and I'm telling you, it has made a tremendous difference for me physiologically, and the inches have been disappearing. It is absolutely the best, and it fits in with a busy time schedule. So you can go to her website, ttap.com, and check it out at any time. But I also wanted to let you know that this is part of what we're going to be discussing this evening at the class. So if you'd like to come, give me a buzz, and you'll be able to do that, 800-872-8852. Also, there is an event in Tacoma, Washington that's going to be coming up on the 13th of December. I've been invited to participate. I just got a call about it yesterday at my office. And so this day has been set aside. It's a Saturday. It's going to be the Dickens Festival. It is absolutely marvelous. I will be doing many consultations while I'm there, so it's fun. Come out in costume. I'll be in costume. It's just absolutely marvelous. It's a magical event, and it's wonderful for families. They have all kinds of things going on. So that's coming up on the 13th of December. And also, if you are interested in getting my email newsletter, because in the newsletter there's positive material, I have recipes, and then I also have a listing of my guests that are coming up on the show. But what that can do, that can just give you regular information on a month. You'll know about my appearances as they are scheduled and when they're evolving and where they're going to be, whether they're local, whether they're out of state, etc. So all you need to do is send me an email. You send it to donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. Also, I wanted to thank those of you who are sending me such wonderful stories. Goodness gracious, I've got so much good material. And whenever I can, I include it. But I thank you very, very much for thinking of me. If you have a special holiday recipe, since we're evolving into that time of the year, if you have something that's so scrumptiously delicious, especially if it's not high fat, or, and you can say, gee, this is fun to serve, and you don't have to worry about putting 45 inches on your lips because or hips because you let it pass your lips, then let me know, because I'd love to have some suggestions. We're all wanting to enjoy delicious food and share it with the people that we love, but we also don't want to end up feeling like we're going to be waddling down the road and having to really suffer after the holidays are over. So any suggestions you might have, send them along to me, donna@delphiinternational.com. Now, I told you I'd share with you some information about Jenny. She's a law school librarian, and this material came across my desk, and when I found out what she was doing with Chinese medicine, she had been given a very negative diagnosis. She was diagnosed with estrogen receptor negative breast cancer. It's an HER2 positive type of a cancer. And she said she just explored all kinds of things, and she was really drawn to the traditional Chinese medicine. Now, she did go through the traditional treatment of having the lump removed and having some radiation chemotherapy. But when she was going through the chemotherapy, she said she experienced so much pain and her energy was so terribly low. And she was remembering from her research that acupuncture might help. Now, her doctors finally said, go ahead and do it. And she said, okay. She started working with a Chinese physician. And between the herbs and the acupuncture, she said, I honestly don't know how it affected me as far as the cancer went. But she said, I felt so well and balanced after going through all of what I did. And she said, I found that they're not substitutes for each other. They each have their benefit. They're very complementary. And she said, I feel that I'm on the right track with this. And the American Cancer Society estimates that up to 50% of cancer patients today, up to 50%, are using some type of integrative complementary therapy. And more than $35 billion is spent each year on these various modalities. This is something that has, shall I say, awakened a sleeping dragon, so to speak, because conventional thinking has not been getting the results. And people are saying, I have options to work with. So what I would encourage anyone to do is don't be afraid to question. And if your physician is in any way interested in other modalities, ask them questions. Go in prepared. Realize that there are many options. And realize as an individual, you have choices. And I'll tell you, one of the choices that I think is really, really important is the choice of wellness. You need to remember that it's far better to do preventative. Anything can happen in life. I mean, those are just the facts. But I have been given material where they've done research on stress and the stress factor in creating cancer in people. They are amazed at how much it causes a problem. And I'd recommend that you get Bill Moyer's, The Healing Mind. I think he did that a number of years ago. And it's been a long time since I've seen it, but I will never forget the story about a professional who was told he was just going to die. You know, that's it. And he used different modalities, and he's still around. But he had to change his thinking, and he had to change the way he looked at his life because he was one of these high, high, high executives, and his stress level was just through the ceiling beyond. So remember, preventative attitudes are important. Preventative actions are important. Hey, this is a chassis you've got. You take care of it. We want you around for a long time. You got something special to give to this life. And it's good to have a good, healthy vehicle so you can do it to the best of your capability. My goodness, we're out of time. Don't forget, next week we've got a wonderful lineup of people. And on Monday, we're going to be talking about unearthing ancient America. Yes, archaeological research I think you'll find fascinating. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You the captain of your soul. There's no one else like you on this planet. You're one of a kind. That's a good thing, because only you can bring forth a message of who you are as an individual and give the gift of grace, talent, whatever it is that you have to give, with the quality of excellence that you can give it in. This is your time. This is your place. This is your space. This is Donna. Enjoy the weekend. Be safe. Be well. I'll be talking to you Monday, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.